Thank you, and then the story for support from him and to have a good to the one who has to have to do to members for the interest of the activities. And that is what no more the recommendation because I said that he will submit his written report. And also thank those members who really contributed to that.
I just wanted to comment on the contributed, I think it was major issue of an offer. But the card that was brought there was very, very light and very, very not befitting the MSC. It was a very cheap card. I was very much worried about that. Thanks.
That is the comment. Next time, we make sure that you consider it wise. Thank you, honorable members, and our presenter, as well as the officials who are on the whole order of the officials from the department, from the provincial department, and then are here. So, for us, we would like to know within the PMG, for us, we would like to know. Who is who from where? These are the members of the portfolio committee on Adam Kalda. Maybe you want to introduce yourself for them to know you when they meet you. Honorable.
Chair, I'll be very funny now. The GS spokesperson of because I'm out of trade. I was not delegated by the committee, but I went to 2020 at the ABC on air each day. Keep it in your mind.
That was all right. That was all right.
I'm Rudy Domingo from ESB Africa.
I'm Mike Konaichan from the National Bay Municipality.
I'm Abdallah Driscoll from the Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
That's also one from the Switzerland Monument at the Heritage Foundation.
I'm Richard Lombard from ECF.
Thank you. I believe all our members will join us in the day. We don't get surprised when it's going to happen. So I'm told that the person people who are going to represent us is annual report. Give us the annual report from Cape Town. Cape Town Festival. Over to you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Madam Fortuna. One of our guests that's invited is Councillor Mike Konaichan and Paul. We are, for the past 3 years, in designing and preparing to launch a music and heritage festival in Port Vincent. For two reasons, they need a big event, and secondly, I'm born in Port Vincent. So it's a thank you for the opportunity. We wanted to do this presentation based on the research that's been done. This has been going on for 9 years, maybe 9 years. And I think it's important for this committee to engage in to understand the future that passing culture can have on the economy of the country. And I've got 30 minutes, so I'm not going to move quite quick. There are two presentations in the first one is the festival. The other one is just information, the Salsa Festival, which is still launching. I'm not going to touch on that, it's just the community information. And so can I move on? The festival has quite a few aspects, I think, which is important in terms of we take the issues around social cohesion and security. The fact that we need to train people within this industry, all aspects of the industry. So our training development program, what we started with the arts and crafts, we've been having them since year 1, 2000, and as you can see, they are coming from 15,000. It's working in a festival. We tried it, we got insured. The other aspect that also works on is the photographic exhibition, and that's looking at the heritage of jazz photographers or music photographers, but also documenting our culture, through, especially music, through imagery. Our workshops are very critical. We are talking about school workshops, which are over 3 days, and that's looking at primary school. We've got another workshop which is more at the end of the game, and I'm going to teach you the buses. We've got another level which is more the emerging artists. Masterclasses, it's for the emerging artists in general, but also the music colleges. So the two areas we pride ourselves with is the music business course, which is accredited, it's a good point, and the art journalism, which is very specialized. The South Atlantic Jazz Music Conference is something we started, we've gone into our second year, and basically that is looking at the state of the live music industry. And in terms of the live music industry, you know, the people want to do policy for musicians, they want to do funeral benefits, but our position is why don't we first look at their income so they could sustain their own policy or make a choice where they want to go to. So that is very important, looking nationally at live music. Is it in clubs, hotels, is it in restaurants, nothing about employees. The impact of the festival, after 9 years, the GDP matching $342 million. The Western Cape, and we say City of Cape Town because it's focused on Cape Town, the old city, 137 million. And these are important numbers in terms of looking at the impact of the event. If we look at globally where we are, Cape Town International Festival is ranked number 4 in the world. So this is done by Jazzy, which is a music survey, jazz survey in the world. They do the top 100 festivals, which include pop rock, gospel, world music, day. But if you take all the jazz festivals in number 4, and they look at the host country, the host city, they look at production, they look at safety and security, they look at use by your artists, they look at sound like so it's quite a comprehensive survey. And after 9 years, we are number 4. In that same survey, we didn't want to go down the line. When our former partners, the Naughty Jazz Festival, that's how we hosted the festival number 15. So I think we are doing something like this. The general stats, our festival came to 53,000. In terms of job creation, and this year we talk about employment, human population, we employ 2,750 casual and contractors leading up to the festival. Our service providers for statistics, we started with about 20% fully DVD, we now have 85%. And what happened was the service providers are dealing with their staff and getting their partners like the same person and so forth. Our music community concert, which is a free concert in Cape Town, based on St. Andrew's territorial, but the ordinance time of the Lord comes to 13 hours. 8,000. Golf day, which is pretty good, you know, for us, it's very selective, it's not at the time. I don't play golf, but in the capital industry. If you look at the numerics in terms of the impact, besides August 2000, 26,000 individual, 500, corporates become very important to us, 6,500. And those are the confident companies. But if you look at the price of the tickets, the corporate almost subsidize your door taking. The 2 day pass, now it's 420 rand for 40 artists for the 2 days. Compared with any of these festivals, that's our door taking effects in New Orleans or Montevideo. We should have been charging 1,500 in terms of standard of artists, in terms of the production. So we see it as subsidizing in terms of our release in public sector, both national and provincial and specific parts, private sector funds are really. We engage with the city, and very from these, we get tourism just at 10,000 in 16 million. This was done on the for tourism research in Africa, so it's a very comprehensive research. And looking at that, and looking at the tourism, we've also decided to take this festival further. It's not about the step on the go through, but I'm to highlight the important ones. In terms of demographic countries, the campground, the unit and Texas, and then there's UK and Germany. But people be consistent coming from our Russia, from the Korea as well. It's also been looking at the red trade is happening, so our marketing is spread wide, not just nationally. And if you look at our teams that support the equipment in South Africa, on the rest of Africa, we are 55%. And we know why they come. They come, a lot of business people, they come before the festival or after the festival. So we want to capture that market and, of course, on the 60% of the rest of the world. The problem is this. 61% of our sales. When it's been like that for normally, any host city, when you start calculating an event, you look at the host city, 50% of the audience. The rest of the state, for some reason, hasn't yet reached 50%. But the even take needs to be taken, but somehow, well, within the challenge of the state. So that's our main event. And this is not from Cape Town, it's from Westerval, Neisner, Plattenburg, and so forth. This is a good idea of that our marketing plan is working, and you'll see the reasons why people come across. This is a bit interesting, okay, 23-56% people didn't say why they're coming here, but 20% of them come down because interesting, the kind of professionals and the age group. And then they ask why they should take up 50% come to the festival. But you also find that because of the accommodation, it's 5% coming, whether it's in family and leisure, and 6% on business, and that's really because people are certainly coming for business. And of course, after that, if you ask them, are they coming for this event? 98% is it. So it's focused on the event. And then if you holiday or if you just work, this is our marketing campaign in terms of jazz signs, and right now we're British one jazz wine. We have designed in Europe, the UK and the States, and our ad has gone out already in 2008. And what he was able to do, he advertised with us one art. Because people know this word of mouth now, that there's going to be good art. Otherwise, you're not easy, you must get art. So this starts in October, November, December, January, February. And initially, our data lies in 2 to 6 years, and I'll explain. This is also kind of happy, but for the U.S. where we have packages coming, four operators are doing so. In fact, this 1,600 U.S. dollars is cheap. And it's a 6-day package. We haven't gone to the U.S. in terms of the company's planning. If I knew the potential of tourism 6 years ago, we would have probably bought into a tourism company. Because that's actually where you can. But what's good is that all the small operators are, we can use them to facilitate our tourism. So that's our annual report of violence of jazz. We are one of the only African state schools. Eventually, there is a successful guy who comes at one thing. That's, I think, there's only one. The other one is a festival of poetry and music in Morocco. If you look at India, India is in China, in our constituents, already covers the world, and of course, our African poetry. Radio, games, you know, African covers, they all come down to perform on TV. If you go to steps, I think, which I'll go through very quickly. We credit journalists today to the area they're coming from. Poets become nationalists, but Africa will always be alone. And of course, the photographer today in China, France, is consistently with. And China, since we brought the double work and now they come, they've been coming back. So we also get artists strategically from the zone. And then the media follows them, but they get so hooked on the multicultural aspect of the game that now they're coming back to come as a international event. I mean, the economy, of course, is usually 63 million, 67 million. Our budget for the festival, our marketing budget, spent 7 months, 1.2 million. I found a lot of that idea to get a huge difference in Africa and if you look at the return based on 1.2 million, 1.67 million, 63 million, 5 million. You can see that now the rest is going up. So this magazine, the consumer magazine, the born out of the brand, and I think there's of the social aspect of the event into tourism, into lifestyle, so very broad, and upon the audience music. The image, in terms of how look and feel, I mean, we're pretty happy with 54% service and 1% service in terms of how we create our program and our services and so forth. For conversations, we've now managed to get into 2 SDGs in Africa. Everyone covers in 2 SDGs, we have to get another one of our sponsors, letting them realize that they have an audience that will come. So they don't cover, they cover more magazines, style than you. National authorities in terms of coverage and of course the Western States and how things are and the rest of the country. This is very important to us. The influencing media is newspapers, television, internet, radio. 43% is word of mouth. Now, have you booked the ticket? It's more powerful, it's become more powerful than the posters. In the second, this is posters in 35. And people have posters nationally. You focus on Cape Town, but you try to cover all the big cities in some transport, and so. But that is very critical.
Excellent.
I visited all the radios, and he's been on most of, on almost all the developers from the radios. You see, it's national. After looking at all the figures and where people come from, and we decided that it would be great to have a 10-day festival. We also adopted a low, a slogan, same towards 2010. And we know that Locke and everyone else can't have a problem with it because we're not using soccer, we're not using football, we're not using Fafana, or we just say towards 2010, and they say that they're clever. We're also locking that into the Department of Arts and Culture, actually, and the city and the province. So we're going to use that as our banner. But what we decided is that that's the paper we can make festival. But we find lots of people don't want to travel. The airport is crazy on a Sunday, so we decided to include one more day on half day, which we will have in the zone. This is the zone that we want to put on the colour in the pool. So the 10 days will be for the graduate tradition exchange. We're introducing our free concerts Wednesday, Friday, Thursday, on the market street. On Thursday evening in the foundation setting and have a garden dinner. And that's for our sponsors to have the special clients. We also want to bring in fashion and jazz. So we have a big name because called Antana, we have him, it's a South African band. But bringing fashion but focused on the young designers rather than. And we also want to look at from fashion from the African perspective, different sizes. Number one, and be honest, we can have, because we understand that all the Cape Town International Fashion Festival, Joburg and Durban, but we are saying, what are we doing with students? We focus on young designers here. These workshops take place, like these workshops, we practice technical theory and technical fun at the festival. We're launching those South African jazz education content. We bring it to the festival, the independent body, the international body, and then we bring it our festival. This dome, which is on the Cullinan Square, which is also the plot near Mark for the Gentleman Futures Peace and Foundation, we get in position to use that, change that into the baseline phase, which used to be inside the CDIC, which is going to be outside. Our workshop takes place at the Digital Museum. The Cape Town will be hosted by our artists as a press on the masterclass. The Grand Parade, we want to own that for a whole week. When we look at the Red Cross Gate, we look at lots of brass bands from churches to schools, primary schools, high schools, a minstrel. So we want to make a brass band. Some of my colleagues are saying competition, but we don't create a family event around that. But we need to do that on the Saturday, so this is the Easter weekend. Friday is open because Easter Friday is the holiest day. If somebody comes up with an idea around that, we will do the thing. But we only have a big focus and a strong, it's a fun gig, a strong kindergarten to grade two, some HIV. You know, the families, parents will bring their kids, but it's a beauty community, but we'll find them in and then we want to have a gospel concert because of the Easter weekend, and we'll have more choral concerts, take down choirs and concerts. On Monday we want to introduce, and we introduce it at the annual very fall time. We want to have 10 times 10, the concert for the elders. We want to look at all the old age homes, we have to bus them in, we have to train them in, but we just want to have a party, a long iron party for our family. Our goal stays safe, and then what we want to do within the CBD is to have all these three parties at venues, which we were working closely with Chippen Group in the district, and then of course after party, so we just want to get Cape Town so involved. That's our vision going forward. is dan nog een 3.5 minuut video, which is just to show the whole atmosphere and the vibe. If it's in a request for access, I can always get it delivered.
Okay.
Madam Chair, Rashid, if I can ask, while Rashid's getting ready to prepare this, I'd like you, if I may, before we show you the schmaltz of what we actually did as a concept, just very quickly sum up in the fact that there's just 10 points. You've seen the presentation which we give as really stacked numbers. I think the thing that we must address is the transport skills of the 2,750 people fighting for creating jobs in Cape Flats over 9 years has been very good. The free concert for the people is the one time that we have given a contribution to international artists from the Jazz Festival as well as local on the same stage and telling the August man and guy from Goldson Tire and from Mitchell's Plain coming to the city, celebrate with us. That's very important. Small businesses, one lady made 56,000 rand, which is very good for small businesses. But I'd like to continue, which is implementation of the BEE component is quite important, that we've addressed that our service providers conform, but not on racial divide. These guys cannot do it. We bring companies and we link them together, so the transfer of skills, but that's also we get the quality. The workshops for those kids from the primary schools that are busing are quite important, and we must exploit that in the sense of a department where we can actually get more out of it. Foreign trade, the amount of money that is spent by our guests post is very important.
I think that actually I always get floored by our own presentation by Rishi. I think that that says a lot between the imagery, but I think that the rest of Africa travel is why importantly our festivals now in Dakar, in Abuja, Mozambique, we're busy expanding Rishi and I through there. And before we hear these, when is the festival, when can we come to Cape Town? And I think sometimes we get very arrogant in Africa where we don't understand that our people in the continent travel more and they go to Japan and other areas because they're not really well treated, the perception of that. Now they're coming down in droves from Africa. Our survey shows they're staying at the best hotels and they're really making a destination choice. During the end of March, they're coming. So I think that's something we can exploit. The export of our South African artists by us to Cuba and to other festivals around the world is not to be taken lightly in the sense we are exporting from the festival to Belgium, to Sweden. So when we have artists are coming, we took the late Baltimore Network, we took Juni Drew, we've taken lots of artists across the year, and we have track record of that. So festivals must also give something back to the artists by exporting them and showing the world what we can do and make headlines. And then lastly, I think the tourism, as I said earlier, from the States now is huge money spenders. But by word of mouth, they are going back every year and saying, man, you missed out. Please come and join us. So in closing, I just want to say, thank you very much for giving us the opportunity. And I just tried to put the 10 points together very quickly that it's not only about music. It's about transfer skills and development of a culture. Because show business is a business. And as soon as we learn that, the better it's not a party. It is a business. And we are treating that business. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your presentation. I think we would advise the presenter to have an opportunity to listen to one of the members of the because if they have presented up by presenter, because I don't want anyone to do to have to wait for the second presentation. So I think I'll keep that raising a question as far as nothing was said unless it's a myth or listed what are the people with disabilities performing or what are they doing? Are they also triggered because I didn't want them unless they were hiding themselves. But they should be part of the festival. I mean, why? I know that although they are left behind, they don't even have that privilege of being part of the project. the other question is that nothing was said about the three chiefs, which is looked at the problem of the area. One would have an interest to look at them. What, how do you capture them? I mean, they're not even enjoying the festival because they're not they're able to come there. But you find outside why the people are inside. And then the other thing, how do you, the other thing, the third one, how do you plow back to the community? Because money is not cheap. What do you do?
Thank you. honorable Benny. Mine was to be in the poverty alleviation, and again I'm covered by honorable economy about rural areas, which is in most of the instances. But now I would like to know that yesterday there is a big event, there's a festival, but after we always say that you guys for the artists most of the time. But then after the death of how do you make your life easy, or how do you make your living after the festival?
People are preparing for 2010. We are not getting the yearly color of South Africa for all nations that are here, but we are just promoting all these areas for Cape Town, for the foreigners, or for the people from outside. They will just see what they used to see from their own places. How are you going to accommodate the proper colors of South Africa? There are also something that is done there by the city people, by the Eastern Cape, by the Northern, the home for all the provinces are doing something on this. We need to accommodate everybody so that we can show the proper color for the country.
Thank you, honorable members. Honorable,
I was just going to hear what
I should respond before I ask my question, because I also want to help you answer some of the questions. The level of the yeah, I think maybe that's just a few.
Rashid, over to you.
Thank you.
Is it Rashid or Rashid?
Rashid. Thank you, Madam Chair. How this disabled and visual disability window was our plan for the rural areas in terms of maybe 2010. But I think I must make it maybe clear, number 7, that we're not a NGO or NGO in the business. We're in the business to make money. We're in the business to train people to make money. So technical people to musicians. I think that's very critical if you talk about the cultural industry or the cultural economy. Very critical. No mahala, everyone gets paid an office, or everyone gets trained to certain standards. It's a very specialized field we're involved in, and the only way we've got to where we are with the training, to getting people coming from outside the country to train us. So I think that's really critical. It's a new career path. That was the big fear of the whole issue around poverty. If we look at the figure of 2,750 people we employ, the people get paid. Our volunteers, we actually don't like to use the word volunteers, because a volunteer in the sense of South Africans to be worth free of charge. Everyone must get paid. A very important aspect of the festival. Then we get them back coming, so we deal with the social perversion and poverty alleviation. We're training people and people getting paid. We're talking about, then we're not a section with a NGO. We're PTY Limited. The question around our funding,
maybe I'll come back a bit later. The health integration, the other provinces, I think that if we look at this festival is unique in itself. We work in a company, we consult a lot with other provinces, in Popo, Langa, Eastern Cape now, and we wouldn't copy it. But the point of what I'm demonstrating with this impact is that all kind of events can have this, cultural events can have a similar impact in terms of, if you look at economics, the GDP nationally and regionally, that says, the festival is not making the money, people out there, taxis, there's crafters, there's all the services around the festival. The festival has been struggling, I'm sure you've been seeing new festival insolvent. People try to take us out. Then again, the other day, liquidation. They've taken some because we don't have the power place of money. But we pull through it, through honesty and transparency. So I think it's important that we see it as a thriving business, but it's going to work. If we look at the issue about the musicians are not unionized yet. We tried many times about my job. I'm not a musician, but I'm a promoter, so I've got interest in unions. Better not be unionized because it's more organized. What I am interested in doing in terms of the conferences we doing now is to get employment. Musicians must be employed. The most important success of any festival is your musicians. I split them equally. There's 40 artists of the 2 days. 20 African, South Africans mainly, and 20 the rest of the world. There's no curtain raising. There's 4 on stage every night. 2 South Africans, 2 the rest of the world. It's the same stage, same night, same hotel, same flight, same cars. My musicians don't drive in cars, no taxi. Anything over 4 hours, which is maybe short, you fly. Because you need them to be fresh, but the audience is educated, then you give the best of those. And I'm saying that because your musician is your ambassador. Your musician can make or break any game. They can go back and say the promoters are short, they haven't paid. You hear that all the time. So when you started, my team was those guys, musicians are ambassadors. They fly, they live in the same hotel. All of them live in one hotel. Not in the share room here and there in breakfast. And all drive in the same fleet of cars. So that's very important because our musicians also connect with the international counterparts. The thing of the rural was very challenging. When we started the festival in 2000, the first thing people attacked. Text us about, oh, there's no workshop. We didn't have workshops at first year because we had to start somewhere. The second thing is they said, oh, you must have a festival RG, HIV, something. I said, no, and I still stand by that. Come from this town, I know this country, you must come to the city. Now, there'd be criticism about it, but you have to take one stand. Come to the city. We bring our feet to the city. We get dressed, we go to the city. You know, the spiritualist, you must now have a small gig. And what happens is they do two small speakers now, they have it at Younger Art Center. Not ever being involved with it again. I don't think I get to come to the city because I own the city, make the city alive. But talking about the rules, it's going to be challenging because we know that we have to connect. Maybe with the schools we can start here, maybe we can start, because only starting a week long program, maybe we can start looking at the schools there that's culminating. Yeah. But we actually can't do everything for everyone. I mean, if you look at it income, and my fear was that all the time, we're going to start that vision, we're going to start a community, jazz or sound, in the community. And we realize that you can't take it for everyone. But don't tell me if you take one artist and place them in a small place here because we must look good. We don't want to look good, we want to capture the economy and create work. But when you set standards, everyone has worked for us. They've moved out of our company, we don't employ them. People are in Dover now, we've got a group of them. So we train people from younger students, young guys, and they get taken out of the town. What they're saying, that's good. These students are the technical ones, they work 2 years for us, and they go back to their company. I think that is more critical. For Asian patients, we cover, especially let's say, we do cover it. It's just that other percent, not everyone that's even like 1% or so. But nationally, let's say, the targets, the MCs are on stage because they're within the camp. After the festival, the musicians, and that's challenging, what do we do? I think what was important with the festival, we set up the music, live music sector, but representation to the conference is national. So we are looking at what happens after the festival. For example, if you take the hotel, you can't find a hotel in Cape Town. We bring that down and say, hello, you make a lot of money from people coming in. How about every we start weekend, have a trio or quartet and expand it. So we're also approaching them. We have our own problems with hotels, the Cape Sun. They've now doubled the rate. Just for artists, they make so much money with us. They've now doubled the rate. And you think, guys, that's not even record. You don't mind saying, you know, why double it? Because you can go on this side. So we've got challenges. Our budget this year was 29 million total budget. That's why we pay everyone. We were asking about National Arts Council. I've tried every year for sponsorship and just for the workshops. It was 3%. In fact, this year it will probably be close to 3.8, almost 4% of our total budget goes to our CSI program. All of that workshops cost money, cost venue. If you see it, it's smart. Everything we do is smart because you need a comfort and bring young people into play. They must get these. The students, they get new, they get busting, they get picked up, they get dropped, we concentrate the culture of the comfort zone. So National Arts Council, every year they don't even respond. I don't know why. The Department of Arts and Culture, nationally, I get 2.2 million from them on a 29 million budget. The Western Cape Department of Culture says I get 700,000, which is focused on the workshop. We run a trust account, South Atlantic Arts and Culture Trust. So government money comes into the trust. So in fact, we've just given us our audits now because the trust that audited, just for the sake of transparency. The city of Cape Town gives us 500,000 in terms of services for these, which we disaster management, traffic department, so they get paid. So in terms of the public sector, very small, but we're grateful for that. It's the other sector that we, and if you are sponsored, a lot of it is trade exchange, you know, for advertising, the French would bring an artist, so we save on flight, the Spanish would bring an artist, save on flight and the artist, so, you know, the, something in 2010, I think, which is pretty much new, which is dealing outside of the festival, looking at training. So disabled, three children. I think that, you know, it's again the three children, we really try to deal with the three concepts. But again, I must stress that, you know, we can't do everything for everybody we'd love to. What we'd like to do is organizations that deal with it to work with us. I think that would be more fruitful to come with a Rashid guy. You know, we've got to see, can we have a part for something? But it's got to be something that, you know, that's going to have outcomes. We like outcomes, very critical. Otherwise, you know, we're just in a business to make money. We need to make money. I've got shareholders. The festival has invested over the past 8 years, 6.2 million, which we're beginning to pay back. So there's also this thing that, you know, we've invested, you've got to pay back. We've got now a Sikunjalo investment out of from the bank came and said, we like what you do, we like Malaysia. We think it's got a lot of input and feedback in the community. In Belize's age, three children, 2010.
Yeah, I guess the exciting one. Firstly, I'm the disabled. From Steve Kukanis, who's from Pimavi, and a couple of artists, we have used before. I take great pride in sitting on the 13th Security Plus platform, toilet for disabled, for wheelchair ramps, for special viewing areas are quite important to me in the setup, so they are very prominent in where we are in all our plans. We don't only do the jazz festival, as I think earlier you alluded to, we do events through the year, that's how we sustain ourselves. We do presidential visas, we go to the rural, we win. We actually have the missions around the country to do this, and that takes in place of different people and their needs. The street children on the free concert, and I did the first one, people told me we will not attend the free concert because of the street children. They are thieves, they drive you in their boat. We turn that around, we've engaged them, and then the doors are open for the free concert right in front of the stage every year. There's about 20 or 40 of these people come down, and then they mingle with our guys. That night, they celebrate not as street children, but as Cape Town people coming to see a concert. We do not say, close with the limit, not allow street children. And so the concert that you spoke about, the street children cannot afford it, some of the guys from Kailish and Mitchell Spain, the other guys cannot afford it, all equally stand and dance to music. We are adamant about that. So their dignity is maintained, they are not street children on that night. As to projects, there was a young lady, spoke to Moraine, we came together, and they did a band that was made out of street children, and they performed in Sweden as well as here. I put them on that stage, and they played to 8,000 people at our free concert. We are very serious about living in the same shoes where it goes. We cannot. We are not powerful enough to sponsor everything in the world. We can only do what we can do as two young men in business, while well, young folks are too faithful. The 2010, we took on Locke and 2010. We are not Freeport Education. We are not people here advocating 2010. All we said was, this is like using a condom. You use it once and you throw it away. We want sustainability. Our program to Locke was, I want to go in Kerbal. I want to go into the Dantum. I want to go into Langford. And I want to put a screen out there so that we can move, not to fan park in the inner city. Everybody's gung ho about fan park in the inner city. Our mission is to go out and take our stages and our trucks to the rural community. But it's more than that. We need to start, and we told people, 28, we're going to go in and start developing people in preparation for 2010, because they can post-2010 as well. Develop skills on how to manage an event, how to deal with safety and security, how to engage with farmers and people about feeding people. But have a legacy program. Have a legacy program other than this 4-day or 4-month or 4-week event. That is our mandate there. Talk about unions. I started SAMPA, which is South African Promoters Association. I started that. Today, all the promoters belong to Lukala. The Roadies Association, which is the state dance, was Freddie, not only endorses us, I worked with him for 30 years. My passion is to train technicians. China, all these guys came through the school that I get. I'm very passionate about transferring skills to people, because we're going to be here for another couple of years, and then hopefully we can retire and do something. But our union system is great. But ladies and gentlemen, I think that when you pass this veneer, the whole facade that the jazz fest is 29 million, we drive old beers, that's not a fact. It is about our passion for what we do. And if people want to engage us and say, I have a project, it's not about money, in the rural areas, how do I develop it? Then I would welcome your engagement. Then I will welcome your criticism, because then you can come to me and say, I have a project in Carbo. How do I develop that? Then my 40 years of technical skill will come into play. And I think the Minister of Arts and Culture and the Presidency has taken me to do the inaugurations of the Presidency. I've done African Aid Union. I've been in Colombia and Cuba to represent our country as a person of color, to teach them that we are not backwards, that we are going forward. And then I move 20 young people who listen, and they continue that. So I may, this may be a perception that I'm very, 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 very hopeful when people think that this whole glamorous jazz festival is about us and money. It is a part transfer of skills, a part development of people. And if people around in the department really feel they would like to engage us in conversation about it, things that they've got, we can have dialogue. Thank you.
But I'm also very passionate about what
And I think with regards to rural involvement, there is a lot of change in that. But I don't think it's really a matter of taking the festival to rural areas, but to find out what people in the rural areas are doing and involve them there and look at the human exposure. I think that's what we need to answer this, the concerns that members raise. And I think it's only thing that in Nazistan doesn't have a festival. There is Makomo then in Limpopo. Mpumalanga has their own. Kaunting has joy of there. There's Makufe. So almost all provinces have what you may refer to as international festival. I haven't heard anything about like the Shiva. Maybe we would expect that there could be something happening to you know, but this might be why I raise this question. Because I see here you talk about brass bands, gospel, minstrels, and so on. You know, for me, all these are actually linked to jazz. When you talk jazz history, these are the things that you find in the development of jazz or involvement of jazz. But my worry is that because it is music plays such an important role in the development of any nation. And I think we've got serious challenges with regards to drugs and crime and other, you know, antisocial diseases. And with music, you can make a very serious impact in changing some of these challenges that we have actually. I've looked at all of the festivals that we have, including this one. And I've always asked myself why they are called jazz festivals, because in my definition of jazz, they are not really jazz festivals. Them to be called music festivals. You know, you have some, even the Advent. If you look at the Advent, it would be someone who's known by maybe most people, but not necessarily a jazz musician or jazz artist. And your, what one would regard as jazz artist, don't get the necessary publicity that they would get. I think in this case that David Murray was here, as he said, and Claudine Meyer in Copenhagen last night. And these people that I've mentioned, almost all of them, have played such a critical role in the liberation that we have today. You know, they may be Americans, but they've really been our cultural ambassadors during the liberation struggle. And I really think people think that young people like quiet, they like this trend that in some cases is very vulgar, and they are exposed to this thing. It's not that they like it, but if they are really exposed to this, I think, you know, you'll have more young people you know, being inclined to the music that I think you know can really influence the way young people think, even older people think and see things. So I just wanted to question. I don't know if you like when you're there on the phone, that
Yes.
Thank you.
Honorable
Lynn. Thank you, Madam Chair. I must have one and forgotten to say this. I mean, collectively and individually, we do acknowledge, I mean, your responses, but this is actually a world-class kind of event, and it makes us proud of South Africa. We are very, very, you know, grateful for that. Congratulations for some of your teams and your efforts and things like that, and everybody around you. And then I must also say that I do love jazz. You know, I love to support my indigenous music, jazz, and classical music. But one is charged with a very fundamental duty of doing an oversight role. And some of the questions that we pose, we are not sort of querying anything, you know, since, but we just have a fundamental role to play. For instance, I mean, just to let you know that arts and culture contributes 2.2 million rands. And one would actually love to see where each and every cent went to. I mean, a kind of suffice analysis. I mean, to this committee, so that, that matters. I mean, we have to know it. So, one has got that kind of a duty to check all those things. Not that we have any statistics that are specific.
If you look at all the festivals that you have on the map here, Montreal, 5 years old, Montreal, 50 years old, and suddenly done 40 because of the festivals, these jazz festivals in the world. There's no pure jazz festival in this world because it doesn't make economic sense in terms of numbers. So jazz and jazz related. And we promoted this festival, jazz and jazz related, and we tried to get the stories to sponsor. It's very critical that we deal with youth. That's why we have the baseline in the youth stage, and we have to deal with the popularity of music. Yes, I know, you've rapped on this, you've rapped, and you've looked over the years, the kind of artist we've got is relevant to what we are trying to do with the youth. So yes, the question is, jazz and jazz related. Jazz has also become broad in terms of you want to have a different play jazz. I say he's jazz, Jamie Cooper. Mario Makeba doesn't say I say jazz. When someone from the word I say jazz. You know, so it's opinion. And yes, it works differently. The joy of jazz is differently. A lot of people are looking for this. In fact, the opposite is going to be in case of the reserve in the community. That was the one question. The other question about the arts and culture, you know, the accountable, you can say exactly where the change of money. That's what makes us up. We report this every year to all our sponsors. Because today's property, just to make proper, they will be able to say, oh, you invested all this year. You know, so the issue around news, around training, around the workshops, it's up to, I know government, I think you see it at 1.3%. In terms of a budget, something 4.1%. We all about 4% in terms of our spend of the funding we get. You could cut that out and just focus on the profit. But I think without that training, we won't be able to create good teams.
Thank you, sir. I'm not really a person of our mind.
I'm going to be standing in the station,
and I'm informed that you might even take it on the
Thank you very much. I think I'll probably tell members to keep in touch and then share whatever you have. And you take everything back home to the rubbish.
Thank you.
I ask Honorable Overman how related to the issue of Honorable Overman.
I'm going to talk about the Afghan Emergency Conservation and Adaptation to post-94. So it's called Adaptation to the Quiteca Monument and the Foundation specifically. The aim will be to give a brief overview of the situation and experience. A brief overview of the situation as experienced by some of the most important Afrikaner heritage institutions in the post-94 political landscape, in particular the Voortrek Monument and Heritage Foundation of the previous all the slides, and then also to answer questions on how the Afrikaner heritage has been affected by the political changes and state policy since 94. To assist you, I have given you a folder in which I have included a number of documents you all have in your possession. My business card is also in there. So if you need any more information, your government can say. I'm just saying this specifically because I believe there is a degree of misconception here. I'm from the Voortrekker Monument in Pretoria, and there is a Voortrekker Museum in Pietermaritzburg. It is not that one. The Voortrekker Museum is now going to be called the Imsunduzi Museum in Pietermaritzburg. I serve on that council appointed by the minister's council member. But I'm here in my capacity as CEO of the Voortrekker Monument and the Heritage Foundation from Pretoria. That's my idea.
Yeah.
You will get a number of extracts from speeches I've made and also media declarations and certain new status in that folder. I think you'll find it interesting, but that is not really the aim of my briefing of today. Before I continue, I would like to point out that, you know, we have various categories of Afrikaner Heritage Institutions. Firstly, I have got the declared institutions, declared in terms of the National Heritage Institutions Act, like the War Museum of the Boer Republic. Those are those institutions that are heavily subsidized by the members of the council and also the CEO, and controls the whole institution very directly. Then you have a number of privatized institutions, not declared in terms of the Heritage Act. Some of them receive some form of government subsidy, like the Voortrekker Monument. I'll refer to that again later on. But then you have others who receive no form of government subsidy, like Black River, for instance. Black River is northern hotel opposite the Norway Museum, but I will also refer to that. And then you have certain provincial and local heritage institutions from Afrikaner origin, like Windburg, Helborn, the Fall Technorama, and many others. I'm today only going to concentrate on those non-declared institutions and use the Voortrek Monument as the case study. The Voortrek Monument built to commemorate the Great Trek and the Battle of Black River. The idea first mooted by President Paul Kruger in 1886 that there should be such a monument, but nothing really happened until 1938. When the cornerstone was laid, and in 1949 it was inaugurated. Controlled until 1993 by a board of control chaired by the provincial administrator, but in 1993 privatized as a Section 31 company with a new control structure and its own board of directors. Since 1994 there was a steady decline, mostly as a result of people thought it was politically incorrect to associate with the Voortrekker Monument. Even Afrikaans speaking people, many of them stood away from the Voortrek Monument. There was some sort of fear that the monument would in any case be demolished. It would not be tolerated in this administration, and people obviously withdrew from the community in an active way. Towards the end of 1999, it was a very low point, because at that stage you had two movements. One was the withdrawal, the other group was people who wanted to sanctify the Voortrek Monument as being holy ground. And these three elements came into conflict in the Afrikaans community as well. By the end of 1999, the low point, and that was when I was appointed in March 2000 to start a new era. We've based on this, let me just say this, to orientate you, you refer to the Freedom Park element. Freedom Park would be in the right top corner of that slide. On the other side is the Johannesburg Pretoria Highway. We are surrounded by three principal roads in the north, the Young Clutch Road leading to the southern suburbs of Tshwane, and then in the east, the Johannesburg Pretoria Highway, and in the south, the Ulfius Road. The owners on that site, the city council, they own certain parts of that area. The state owns one remaining portion of that area, and the central part belongs to the Section 21 company, size 251 hectares. We based our new management philosophy since March 2000 on three pillars. One is sound management, second one is excellent service, and third one active marketing. And everything which we do with faith, passion, and very hard work. As far as sound management is concerned, I will revert to that again shortly, but you can have ample proof of that in your folders. We concentrate on good corporate governance, proper strategic and financial planning and control processes, expansion, rejuvenation, and ennoblement of personnel. Ennoblement being getting better qualified people, younger people, more active, and professionally trained to do their jobs. Logistical and project management, and then diversify the skill of the jobs. I am willing to answer any question on the talent management aspect if you have that on. Aspects of service excellence, we concentrate on repair, maintenance, and expansion of facilities. And then I would like to point out specifically also the toilet. I would believe if you go and inspect any institution's toilet, you'll know whether that place is well managed or not. Develop benchmarks of excellent service delivery, training motivation of personnel, employees, and then we place the accent on hospitable approach. All visitors equally welcome. I hope that Mr. Molodek has experienced that at our venue. Why do we do active, we also say aggressive marketing? Firstly, to improve our image. I think we are very realistic to say that, though, in the eyes of some people, we've been the icon of apartheid.
you have the image of a declining exclusive item of a property. You've got to change that to one that is happily growing, professionally managed, and open to all South Africans. To improve our legitimacy, to remove the threat of to survival from the community and from the government institutions. Thirdly, to provide tourism, and you will shortly see why, and seek the last event to expand our sources of revenue. What have we done to address the perceived challenge of our legitimacy? I think this is a very critical statement. We deliberately repositioned the Footlag Monument and the Heritage Foundation as integral part of the RSA's Federal National Heritage Estate, accepting the following as part of the new reality. Firstly, the Afrikaner's history, culture and heritage is part of the total cultural and history of South Africa, and it cannot be maintained and promoted from the tensions of cultural isolation. So we deliberately let the tensions of cultural isolation. We show respect to others and the history and heritage without losing self-respect or respect for our own. We support the principle of nation building and reconciliation. I cannot understand how anybody can be against that. We reject all forms of racism and extremism, irrespective of who are the perpetrators are. Preferential treatment given to the Afrikaner Heritage Institutions in the previous dispensation. Main change priorities, transformation and affirmative action in the post-94 situation. Inevitable, we accept that as part of the reality. The Footlag Monument and the Heritage Foundation support efforts to amplify and reinterpret, but not distort nor reconstruct, when history is the history of all the people and cultures of South Africa, including the Footlag Monument's own exhibitions, yet will oppose deliberate degradation, neglect, and vandalization of Afrikaner heritage. The Monument and the Heritage Foundation are willing to share their own experience and expertise with other institutions, as long as it's not seen by them as misplaced paternalism. The Monument and the Heritage Foundation actively support the government's efforts to reach out to the rest of Africa. I personally, on a number of occasions, I attended the Africa Day celebrations, and I've also been in Uganda earlier this year to speak on the healing of the wounds of conflict at the 4th International Institute of Peace and Tourism seminar. And then we have also addressed specific invitations to selected members of Black community, including past President Mandela. And this year shows you where President Mandela, immediately after the unveiling of that statue there, was photographed with the family, the descendants of Dani Tron, very well-known Boer hero of the South Africa-Anglo-Boer War. This was a very interesting event. I wanted to show you many photos, but I realized that there would not be time available for that. Other things that we do to address the legitimacy question, the training and motivation of personnel, the appointment of Black guides, introduction of third language in our exhibition hall. We have active marketing also aimed at traditionally Black schools. In fact, we have more learners from traditionally Black schools visiting us than learners from traditionally white schools. We have a new hospitable approach, and all South Africans are welcome and made to feel welcome. We participated with the National Affairs Force to present cross-cultural days. We have active progressive media liaisons, and I frequently participate in live media talks on a variety of subjects. Tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock on the RSG, there is a program by Craig Robinson plus Tom on the guest for that hour on heritage conservation again. We have active liaison with government structures, all of them. As far as I have frequent participation in government sponsored seminars, I participated in a seminar discussion about a week or two ago at Constitution Hill, and where we debated specifically this question of where does Afrikaner heritage conservation stand in the post-94 situation. Attempting to constructively cooperate with Free Farm Trust, the Commission for Protection of Rights, apartheid museum, Hector Peterson Park and others. We have in fact trained people from the apartheid museum and the Hector Peterson museum at the Footlag Monument, and we've got a good relationship with them. We've got an MOU with the Freedom Park Trust, but it doesn't always work as well as we would have liked it to work. We actively promote the participation in national activities and holidays and new symbols. Frequently I'm criticized for that, but my approach is that the Suffolk holidays belong to all of us, and we must all celebrate it. Of course, if we do not do that, we are in fact politicizing the public holidays. They are there for all of us to celebrate. I serve on the council of the Umzinduzi Museum in Pietermaritzburg for the second term running. The minister will announce the change of this museum's name from the Voortrekker Museum to the Umzinduzi Museum on the 29th of this month at Pietermaritzburg. We last year successfully presented the seminar on the Great Trek and the Battle of Vlaardingen, its legacy. It is something that would have been unthinkable 10 years ago. But now we have actually put many subjects concerning the Battle of Vlaardingen deliberately on the table to be debated. I think this is part of our new approach to have to amplify history and to also look at the interpretation of history. Actions aimed at protection of other cultures and monuments as well. We would like to be more active in this regard, but we still find that many times people from other Marathi groups are a bit hesitant to engage with us in this regard because they consider it to be politically incorrect. International liaison, we are very active as far as that is concerned. And then we say we gladly and proudly admit that we have more than one identity. We are proudly South African, but we are also proudly Afrikaans speaking, and at the same time also proudly Afrikaner. And we do not find it necessary to deny any of these identities because we are proud of all three of those identities. In fact, if I speak in the African context, I also say we are proudly African. From Africa, because I think that is part of reality as well. Some of the success indicators, and I'll be brief about this, we are accessible to physically disabled persons for the first time you mentioned. Unfortunately, they cannot go right up to the dome, but that's virtually impossible unless you now install some sort of lift there. But I find that many people who are not in any way handicapped also do not want to go there because they feel like. So that is not such a big thing. They can go to the first level around the project monument, but not right up to the top. That is impossible. We've become a role model at a heritage institution nationally and internationally. In fact, I've been invited to a number of countries to address them on how we have succeeded in managing change because some of them have similar problems in their own countries. I think our legitimacy, image, and prestige at this stage are greatly improved, and we have won many awards. There's been a dramatic improvement in the staffing situation. In 1990-2000, there were 27 employees. We are now 84 employees, so we have actually created jobs for many people who are well qualified, but who were sitting at home in many cases. We've established the Voortrekker Monument Group. The question about our legal entity, if there's a trust. There's a Section 121 company and also a private limited company. I'm the CEO of all three of these various organizations, and we manage them through one set of people. We haven't got various management, different groups of people to manage them. We increased our operational budget from 2 million rand in 1999-2000 to more than 10.5 million rand this year. With that, that's been increased and diversified our sources of income. We have spent more than 17 million rand on the infrastructure since the beginning of 2000, including a grant of 3.674 million from the Locker Fund and the DHS automated contribution of 2.89 million from the Transformation Fund for the upgrading of our exhibition. The state subsidy has increased from 435,000 rand per annum to 1.566 million rand per year, which is less than 21% of our total budget, operational budget. A number of paying visitors at this stage, vicinity of 200,000 per year. We have taken over various areas, other areas of facilities like Blood River, Kerkenberg, Gatsrand, Loukrand, Rodenburg in Northern Cape, and also the Nuffy King Cemetery. In fact, there are so many requests for us for places to be taken over that we just cannot cope with that. It's impossible. We just do not have the capacity to keep on taking over places that are being neglected. We successfully launched the Heritage Foundation, that's the Afrikaans Stichting, the Afrikaans word, and the research trip, Navorsing trip, over and above places. We manage and we absorb the most of the running costs of these organizations. We've successfully rescued large numbers of valuable heritage assets, including statues, sculptures, and other works of art, which have become less welcome in the traditional environment. They include, for instance, the portraits of the old state presidents, the busts of all the previous prime ministers, many of the very valuable art works of the old EPA, because they landed in storerooms and in kitchens. And we rescued them because we say that one day the political dust in South Africa is going to settle, and then those works of art are still going to be important. We cannot allow them to go lost now. We have completely revised and amended our statutes of the Section 21 company to make it more open and accessible for everybody to become members. And we believe we have made a decisive contribution to the restoration of the positive self-image of many Afrikaners and Afrikaans-speaking people. Just some of the awards we have won over the past few years, the PBOC1 for the year. The newest one is the PMR Golden Arrow Award to the monument as the most exciting, interesting heritage site in Swani. But if you look at last year, we won the African Tourism Museum of the Year 2006, the best museum in Africa, and then others as well. I will not go on with that. Where do we get our funds from for our operational budget? You see, entrance fee 54%, state subsidy only 21%. In the case of the declared institutions, some of them get 90 to 100% of the operation income from the state in the form of a subsidy. We get only 21% of the state. And we're grateful for that. I'm not complaining. All I want to put this in perspective to say that we must really work for what we get and what we want to achieve. A rental received from for the facilities at our stores, 14%. A garden of remembrance, we sell niches, 5%. Net profit on sales, 4%. And then friends of Perfect Monument and Black Over 2%. By the way, Jesus, I would like to invite all of the members of this committee to become friends of the First Acre Monument. They are more than welcome. If you can see where we spend our money on, human rights costs 58%. Once again, I would like to compare that to the state institutions, where you find up 70 to 80+% of their operational budget spent on personnel. We only spend 58%. This implies that we pay our personnel only about 1/3 the salary of what they would have earned in the case of a declared institution, which is a very important aspect. Administration and subsidies, 14, bank charges, interest on loans, 8%. Once again, in the case of the declared institutions, the figure there would most likely be nil, because they get subsidized by state and their shortages are covered by the Department of Agriculture. We cannot do that. We have to go to the bank and we have to go and borrow money if we cannot make our ends meet. Security alarm 6%. Another one is 5%. The bank insisted for them to finance us. We must not only prove our survivability as a business entity, we must also deposit amounts of money each month, 50,000 months per month, so you can grow, so that by the year 2011, that growth fund would be adequate to cover all our costs. They went further. They also insisted that my life be insured. So should I die before 2011, then the debt will be paid in any case. So there's double insurance from their side. The other amount, very small, we say we actively, aggressively market and communicate ourselves. We only spend 2% of our budget on that, which is a very minimal amount of money. A few things that I think you might find interesting, you look at that. That is the details of the number of paying visitors to the First Acre Monument since 1999-2000. You see that we have a very seasonal pattern. Obviously, it's a low point in June, high point October, November. But you'll see, if you look at the column about 7 from the left, this far this year, it has gone very well with that as far as our tourism numbers are concerned. It can be very interesting here if you equate the tourism numbers of tourists, the actual income in Cape Town. You can see the tower in all the left 7 months from March to September. We are doing quite well this year with the number of tourists and also the revenue from that source. Here you can see on this one, on the left, the blue is what we achieved last year at our gate money. The middle column, the maroon red one there is what we budgeted for this year, and the third column, the yellowish one, is what we have actually achieved. You can see that for this year so far, every month we have exceeded our budget with between 50,000 and 100,000 rand per month. In any case, we've exceeded the income of last year for the same month, also with the same degree. So it's a good year for us, and we are very grateful as far as that is concerned. Just to see the comparison of the total number of paying visitors to our site, please remember that the one on the right-hand side, the extreme right, is only the year-to-date figure. Obviously, that looks less. But I'll compare that with the other years on a year-to-date basis as well. So you can see there approximately 150,000 visitors per year. We have excluded certain numbers here. The real number would be closer to 200,000. If you look on the first 7 months of the year comparative basis, you can see that we are doing better this year than any other year since 1999-2000. You've got the numbers in your folder as well. So I'm just giving you the image here. If this pattern is, the trend is continued for the rest of the year, we should definitely reach 200,000 visitors total for this year. A very interesting aspect is to see the change of trends. In the past, we had many more visitors from foreign countries visiting the Voortrekker Monument. This has changed, and at this stage, on a year-to-date basis, we have had more domestic visitors visiting the Voortrekker Monument than foreign visitors. This might change because October and November being our prime month, we might get more from those sources. But at this stage, other than in the past, different from what used to be in the past, we have more domestic visitors than foreign visitors. If you look at where our foreign visitors come from, it was interesting to note that also on the presentation of the Jazz Festival. On the left, extreme, China the most visitors to the Voortrekker Monument. Secondly, Germany, thirdly, France, and then the fourth one is the rest of Asia and Australasia. And one should, in fact, add the fourth column to the first column. You see that by far the majority of visitors come from Asia. Netherlands, next, then the rest of Europe and Russia. North and South America, United Kingdom. Not many are coming to United Kingdom because they are more interested in the battlefield routes of KZN. And they come to the Jazz Festival, as you've seen. Not so much to the Voortrekker Monument. And then from the rest of Africa, you see only 101. That is one of the markets that we must still break through to. Obviously, people coming from Africa, you've heard how many come to the Jazz Festival. But many of them come for conferences, businesses, they visit families, and more shopping than visiting. Many of them obviously go to Soweto, Apartheid Museum, and the Hector Peterson Museum. They don't normally come to us. This is something that we are working on. So far, the Voortrekker Monument. I've deliberately kept it brief, but you might want to ask questions. The Voortrekker Monument has also played a leading role in the establishment of the Heritage Foundation, the Afro-Turk, and another Section 21 company managed by the Voortrekker Monument staff. The aim is to assist with the conservation of threatened heritage resources, especially those here who are currently in part of the community. We began something undated since 2000 at the Voortrekker Monument that we couldn't continue to do that. Apart from that, the Voortrekker Monument still has a geographic impediment. It's seen by some as from the north. They see it as a building on a hill to the south of the city center of Pretoria. And the people in the Western Cape find it difficult to associate with the building because it's from the north. Many people will tell you that, listen, my predecessors never took part in the Great Lake. Why must I associate with the Voortrekker Monument? So we established the Heritage Foundation that is, in terms of its name and also in terms of its national status, more acceptable all over the country. Also, Board of Owning Directors, no state subsidy assistance at all, and to make to fund it, we have to establish four categories of membership. Firstly, A1 is culturally related organizations who pay 50,000 rand to join and 200,000 rand per year. The A2, they pay 10,000 per year, they pay 10,000 to join and 2,000 per year. Then category B includes other smaller organizations, also legal entities. They pay 5,000 to join and 1,000 per year. And then individuals, any individual, can become a member by paying 1,000 francs and 200 francs per year. You can see the number of visitors we have at the moment and also the number of people who serve on our board of directors. We also have two co-opted members on our board of directors. You have the names of the directors in your folder. I don't want to waste time on that. The Heritage Foundation keeps itself busy with three major categories of projects. The first one is to establish organization on a national basis. Now, the activities entail much more than you actually find on the site. Governmental liaison takes quite a bit of time, obtain additional sources of revenue, reactivate local communities. What we find in the special rural areas that the communities tend to be much older, poorer, they withdraw from the community, they are not so active as far as heritage conservation is concerned. Also, the local government has other priorities that they have to attend to, and so you find that generally a neglect of heritage resources in the more rural areas, and therefore we have to motivate people to become responsible, to become actively involved, because we cannot do everything from Pretoria. We have taken a significant stake in our heritage resources in custody. We have selected heritage sites from the SA Anglo Boer War, like the camps at Durenburg at this Orange Free State in the Northern Cape, which is an extremely important site. The Crossface Camp Cemeteries in Mafeking, as well, we took that over. We've established the heritage networks of other Marathi cultural groups, not as successful as we would like it to be. We established concrete international contact, and we have an active liaison with other related heritage institutions. That is to establish organization on a national basis. Our second project is to construct a heritage center on the site of the Voortrekker Monument. It's a three-story building. It will comprise archives, museum and weapons stores, library, research center, and then also permanent and temporary exhibition. This project is going to cost us 11.8 million rand. We have already collected 9.7 million rand from the private sector and 2.039 million from the state to enable us to transform the exhibitions of the Voortrekker Monument. We still need an additional 2 million rand, which I'm actively collecting at this stage. And the theme of the permanent exhibition will be the evolution, role and contribution of the Afrikaners since 1902 in the process of conflict, adaptation and growth. Our whole approach will be to present this in an apolitical, objective, scientific way, highlighting the high points and the low points, because we say that all that together has contributed to what the Afrikaner has done over here and where the Lit Culture Group is standing at this stage. Therefore, I can put it quite clearly to people like Ralph Fisher will also be mentioned in this. It's not going to be a political exhibition, but it is necessary for two reasons. As I mentioned, for people come to South Africa, they go to the Apartheid Museum, they go to the Exhibition Park, and if you've been there, certainly you can't blame them if they don't have a very positive image of the Afrikaner and his language. And nowhere in the country do they get the opportunity to visit the place where they can also see the other side of the coin, just to make a more informed judgment of what the role of this group has been since 1902. And this is not going to be to glorify people. It is not going to be an exhibition aimed at letting some people look better. In other words, it's going to be objective as far as that is concerned. We have already started the construction, and it will be completed by June 2008. There you can see the construction. It's a three-story building. This is the photo that I just got yesterday. When I left yesterday, it was raining very heavily in Pretoria, so I couldn't get an updated photo of the situation yesterday, but we have made a lot of much more progress than this photo has been taken. The third one is to establish the Independent Research Trust. Why is it necessary? We, again, part of our pragmatic approach to the situation is that we say we realize that the government now has other priorities that they've got to attend to, like unemployment, youth, housing, and many other things. And there is less money available to spend on the research concerning the Afrikaner culture industry. So if we want to give attention to that, we must raise funds ourselves to also finance that. We have established a trust, so we've got tax-free status in terms of Section 18A and 13. We concentrate on Afrikaner and Afrikaans-related subjects against the broader South African background and then inclusive, not exclusive way. In other words, we don't look for reasons to exclude, we rather look for reasons to include. We have to recruit 100 to 1,000 members at 20,000 rand each to establish an initial capital of plus minus 2 million rand. We have already collected 1.4 million rand and we have been able to grant, make a research grant of 175,000 rand already. One of the major risks for the Footlink Monument and other undeclared Afrikaner heritage institutions, and I could elaborate on this. The first one is obviously the acts of God, tsunamis, not like in Victoria, but yesterday there was a rumor that we were going to suffer the consequences of a tsunami in Gauteng yesterday. Some people experienced it that way. Secondly, the events at international level in which the Footlink Monument has no control. For instance, he said there is an 11-9 in New York. It impacts directly on the flow of tourism internationally, but we can't control that. If that is, as at the moment, international World Cup rugby in France, it impacts on the number of tourists, but we can't say stop the international World Cup rugby, we are losing tourists. Mm-hmm. It's beyond our control. Third one, obviously, is the situation with respect to government and official organs of state. That is something that we have to manage very carefully. The fourth one is the situation with our own support base. You must accept that, as in any population, cultural group in the country, you have people, your extreme left, you have people on your extreme right. We associate with the people on the extreme right. But that's also one of the things that we have to manage. You can issue media statements, and you will see some of the media statements that I have issued deliberately distancing us from extremist organization. But there are some people who say that, listen, we support the Footlink Monument. Now, we cannot keep them in the heat, as I may put it that way. But on the other hand, we do not want people to think that we have any special contact or sympathies with them. In fact, I may just mention that we have now deliberately denied two groups from the right to use the Footlink Monument facilities. One group is the Boer Volk Vrye Stichting. I believe they are chaired by a person, Dr. Les Pretorius, who is at this stage on bail from the High Treason Court. They wanted to use the monument, and we said, no, we are not going to allow that. They threatened me, they came to speak to me. If they are angry, they call me West Ham Offerman. If they are very angry, they call me Good West Ham Offerman. But no, we just say that we are not going to associate with them because that is contaminating. We do not want to let them or other people think that we support their extremist ideas. Other group that we also now deny permission to come and speak to or to have a service day is the Bangkok and Christian Boerfolk. And Regine Karabraj is the person who wanted to give the introduction. They said it would be a short introduction, but when I got the message, I saw he has allocated to himself an hour. And I said, no, an hour is not short message. We say no. They are now going to do it, I believe, at Dr. Staff, or perhaps at Ritz or some other place, but not. We do not want our facilities to be used by people who want to exploit it and want to benefit because of the association. Now, we rather run the risk of managing the aggression than to associate and support them. And then internal factors. The gentleman spoke about him and Machine being young businessmen, then he qualified that. I should also perhaps say I'm not a young businessman anymore. And what's going to happen after me? What are we going to do with our old infrastructure, the building being, and the services being more than 50 years old, not unmarked? Not marked. Frequently, you only discover that you've got a leaking water pipe when the water comes to the surface, and that pipe might be 6 meters or more underground. So it's a very difficult thing with an old infrastructure. We've got a few challenges, and these challenges are relevant for all such non-declared institutions. Firstly, we are acutely under-resourced, especially in terms of subsidies, grants, capital expenditures. The state does not contribute anything towards our capital expenditure. We must find the money for that. The remuneration of our personnel, as I mentioned, we pay our personnel about a third of what the personnel of the declared institutions get. And in practice, we must take care of ourselves. We must work very hard, as I've said before. Secondly, we have a very limited capacity to help out, but there is an unrealistic expectation. People will, again, tomorrow morning between 8 and 9, I'm sure many people will call in and tell us to take over certain facilities. But the fact of the matter is we haven't got the resources to try and be the Don Quixote of African Heritage Corporation. It's not possible. Obviously, our access to the DIC enjoys low priority, and there's still uncertainty about the future payouts of subsidies. In fact, I do not want to sound that we are just criticizing the DIC. We have very big appreciation for what we are doing, but obviously, we are not a declared institution, and therefore, we have lower priority as the declared institution. We are changing priorities at national, provincial, and local level. I think one of the prime examples now is the National Afrikaans Literature Museum in the Bloemfontein, where there are certain things happening that could be criticized. I'm not yet criticizing at this stage, but it is a very, very serious problem. There is a negative effect on our support base of some related and also unrelated actions by the authorities, and I would like to mention a few of them. Without inviting them, unless you want to ask questions about those. Certain name changes, like Pretoria and Potchefstroom. May I immediately say that we from the Heritage Foundation say that name changes, again, are inevitable. There will be name changes because the situation pre-94 could not be maintained. Just that some names have more emotional value than others, and obviously there's impact on the group as a whole. If this that is not treated in a very delicate way. The closure of certain museums like Paul Technorama and Heilbronn. Heilbronn is not so important, but Paul Technorama, let me explain what I mean with this. Paul President Chef gave his personal collection to the Paul Technorama. That collection ended up in the storerooms of Paul Technorama. We are now trying to rescue that. In fact, he's willing to give it to us, but once again, because limited capacity. He's got 550 items that were given to him from all over the world in that in the storerooms of the Paul Technorama. We can but take over approximately 50. And then I've stretched it. We can in fact only take over about 35. But I've compelled my personnel to look for more that we can take over 50. What is going to happen with the other 500 that we get? Because the individual contact attack. Other museums cannot cope with it, so this is a very critical point in this situation. There's a total neglect and decay of other museums and monuments. If you go to Vinburg is a prime example. It used to be one of the very important footstaker monuments and museums in the country, but at this stage, it is really a disgrace to go to that monument. It's in a very, very, very bad condition. Bergendal in Mpumalanga, again, there's the same sort of problem there. Police used to take care of this monument, but they moved away. Now there's nobody who can take care of that. I can mention many other examples. There is, in some cases, deliberate destruction of monuments, like in the Sonneton, where that commemorative plaque was destroyed by the instruction of the mayor of Sonneton. And then there's a very serious controversy about the omission of names of the ex-SADF that he had fallen from the Wall of Remembrance at Cedar Park, something which I can comment separately if you would like me to. I've referred to the contaminatory effects of actions of extremist and activist groups in different communities, regardless of the fact that they are not supported by the Heritage Foundation institution. And then obviously, the chapters of my say so. You're all politicians, and I've worked with politicians for many years. I know that there's a residual perception and unpolitical agenda from all parties, all politicians. So I don't think that it's part of the reality again. But at times, it makes it so that regardless of our best effort, at times we are confronted by such residual agenda. Holy is concerned, and this is the last slide, I say that despite, or possibly as a result of the challenges that I have pointed out, I think it's going to go well with us, but qualified. I do not think it will be possible to let it go well everywhere. And to let it go well, we will have to work extremely hard. We accept that as part of the challenge. We know that we will have to work hard because the situation pre-94 had to be reversed in some other way. It has made it more difficult for us. But because it's more difficult, we'll have to work harder and we will have to work harder. I will see a possible bigger role for the Heritage Foundation. In fact, we have now spoken to the our legal advisors to possibly change the name of the mother company so that we can transfer the assets of the Footpack Monument to the Heritage Foundation and that we manage the Heritage Foundation in the future as a principal company, taking care of the Footpack Monument, Clyde and Blood Server and all the others, but to make that the representative organization. And then we see that we could possibly assist the Department of Arts and Culture, and we are willing to be constructively involved by acting in an advisory capacity to them to also facilitate the submission of the business plans of the undeclared institutions to consolidate that, to make the recommendations, and to also be involved in the reporting back process. Something which we find at this stage, for instance, is that there are 6 undeclared institutions. But they all have to submit their business plans and they all have to submit their MOUs to the Department of Arts and Culture. At this stage, we have submitted our operational plan, our business plan, our MOU signed a long time ago, but we have to wait until those other 5 have also submitted theirs before any subsidy can be paid out to them. Now, it's nearly 8 months of the financial year and we have not received anything because the partners is still waiting for the others to submit those. I think we can play a role and tell them, give it to us next week, and we can consolidate that and submit it to the department and make it easier for everybody concerned. So that is what we foresee in a more constructive sense. But once again, being realistic, we expect that there will be further deterioration at certain levels with us being able to do anything about that. As I said before, we cannot be everything for everybody in terms of Afrikaner Heritage Conservation, and certain things will go lost. Our policy is that wherever possible, things must be maintained, retained in situ where it was erected. If it cannot be rescued there or maintained there, it must be moved to another place in the same province. But if it can be done there, we must look at centralizing it somewhere else instead of allowing it to get lost. But many things will get lost if they stay where they are at this place. So something must be done by the Heritage Foundation and by the local communities that we succeed in reactivating about those, but we will not be able to do it on our own everywhere. Chairperson, that is what I want to convey to you, but if there are any questions, I would very much like to hear back.
Thank you very much,
Chairman
Offerman. I think that you were saying history, which one believes that those who did history and know the truth that what you are talking. It was a mouthful, but still we have some questions to clarify. From the beginning, Honorable Member Dibedi, we were talking about reconciliation. I think what still mentioned in the name was that we proceed up to Makado. One would want to know and be more clear from the Afrikaner that if still they maintain the name Full Tracker, don't you think somehow it touches their name, somehow? That like we have Freedom Park, which I mean is really welcoming everybody that we're now free. Why can't we work together? And then sort of like, you know, reconciling at the same time. One would still again would like to know, as far as employment is concerned, that how did you address the question of legislation? Looking at mixing these people, who are the discuss then? Is it a mixture of all blacks and whites and yellow and green, or only Africana? And then one would like to have some clarity on this issue. Because they are opposite Freedom Park. But who is that? I can't say any man. Who is that over the bridge? Thank you. Honorable Bengu, Honorable Chatham.
Thank you, Chairman.
I forgot to welcome on the book. Like I said, that some of you are not here in the presentation.
I wish to congratulate you, Mr. Oberman, on your opposite, your Major General Oberman. Sorry for that. For your wonderful presentation. Very comprehensive, very detailed, and yes, very honest. Yeah, it's wonderful, and it shows. The kind of effort you put in. For this kind of a presentation, and we're very grateful for that as a committee, because sometimes some people come here, you know, poorly prepared, and we're very grateful for that. I don't know whether mine is a question, but it's more of a comment, you know, because I was looking at quite a number of things that you've touched on. My comment, you know, is just around the issue of legitimacy, which you touched on there. I think, to me, as the Honourable Chair was just commenting here on the issue of the Commission, I think it's a very involved kind of an issue which, not in this kind of a present day and age you ever resolve that, because, you know, it takes the whole thing. It takes the whole thing, for instance, the issue of reconciliation, the issue of quite a number of things. It takes the mental paradigm shift, politically speaking, and it takes the whole of you, whether that's the inner and the outer, you know, part of your whole body system, talk to each other. So it's a very involved kind of thing. So that, the historical wounds, to other part of the session of the committee are so fresh, and she was talking about that your neighbor is the Freedom Park. My neighbor here is the honest member who comes from the Ra family of the Zulu Nation. When you talk about the Blood River, you celebrate your victories in the Blood River, and the Zulu who celebrate their loss in the Blood River. So I don't know how to achieve it, but I pray that one day we will change the blood that was bled in Blood River to be the water for the conservation, that's what we are actually looking for. And if we can all have that kind of an attitude, and I think perhaps you need to embark on a more vigorous search for, you know, other vigorous ways of changing the whole thing, so that you could, you know, attain that kind of a level of legitimacy which you are actually, you know, complaining about. Thanks.
Honorable Marleta, followed by Marleta, followed by Marleta, and then Kadamba and Bombo.
Thank you, Chapter 2. Let me thank the Mayor General Optimus. I miss you for the second time. First time you visited here. Yes. I just wanted to find out from you what channels do you utilize to communicate the message about the importance of the monument to the township and how can we help them? And how many black rural townships how is the composition, how many men in your composition and how many women? And I just want to find out how do you ensure that this monument is continued when you are no more? I don't say already, but when you are no more, why are you alone here? I prefer that you bring other people than coming out of
here. Thank you. My gentleman, I think I'm partly covered. I'm the bank. But I just wanted to find out, you know, we went to KZN and visited some of the war sites. One that struck all of us was when we got to Mom and we went, we visited Mom and then there was Black River on the other side. That is the monument that the Afrikaans I wanted to find out from you whether or not as you've on a number of occasions said you're in favor of the change that is taking place in our country, your contribution towards reconciliation and so on. Don't you think it's about time that the two sides whoever is in charge on this side and this side, at this time, because we couldn't, it was locked on the other side, we couldn't visit that, even as a portfolio committee of parliament, we couldn't access that because it was locked and no one knew how, we could gain access to that side. And we still felt when we left KZN that it is important that the committee one day visit there's a story told on Norma, and there's a story told on this side. And whoever tells the story on this side doesn't know what the story is on this side. And so it's from this side. So it is a story about one event, and the two tellers of this story don't know what they are saying. So I think at some point, in the spirit of reconciliation, in the spirit of nation building, that we see the French visiting some place in the Eastern Cape. Come and celebrate something that once happened there and reenact what happened during that time. And here you have people in the same boundary not coming together to talk about, the interpretation of the side and the interpretation of the other side and how this can be used. Mr. Bengu became a bit emotional when he spoke about the blood being turned into the water that can nourish this reconciliation and nation building. That we actually use that, as one other step forward. So there are many things that we use as South Africans to demonstrate that we are moving forward in nation building and reconciliation. And I think this is one area that needs to be looked at. The other one, the other one, is actually, I want to get your view on this thing, because there's a lot of, on the one side, there is accusation, as it is from government side, it's almost as an accusation that the white people, and I think in particular Afrikaners, do not participate in certain holidays or celebrations, and in particular the Freedom Day celebration.
there is a complaint within the African community that we don't see ourselves in the system. We don't have a role in it. We are disregarded. It's almost saying that we are being marginalized. What would you, you know, from where you stand, especially your position within the African community, what do you think could be done to try and get, especially Freedom Day, to be owned by all South Africans, in particular, you know, I would say, in our case, the African community.
A lot has been said, and I made just a few bullet points, but I would like to say, however, I hope maybe it's not going to say we're going to change the word "fur cracker," because whether it's painful or not, that's part of my heritage too. In fact, I think if you will allow me, I think this committee actually has to have a good workshop on heritage and history from all sides, and not wait for entities to come. Because, you know, I must tell you, and the major is definitely maybe in a different class than what I am. I'm just a stupid politician, simple. And very awkward for any Afrikaner to come and sit here and actually sell, still Afrikaners to improve and keep on preserving, while they seem to be the baddies of this country. You go to Robben Island, I feel extremely unwelcome and South African, because the story told there also only tells one side. And I actually want to congratulate you to come here and actually have the guts and the courage to still come and put the food trackers on the board here. And we must appreciate that, in fact, you know, the one, if you, and we have not done this in 3.5 years, really. Nathan Building, a social cohesion chairperson, is unfortunately taking the Afrikaners, the Zulus, the Kordas, whoever, whatever battlefields and battles and wars there were, to make this country work. And I mean, I've on many occasions spoke about, of course, in Sikelele, the Afrikaans version, still used the old words in 1946-47. And in fact, we have to come to that acceptance. And that's why I say we must have a workshop just amongst ourselves as well. Because, you know, somebody once said to me, why must an Afrikaans-speaking person always run with history and heritage? Maybe because we forgot about colonialism, and now we blame the Afrikaner for everything that went wrong in this country. And then it's so difficult to come and sit here and explain, because here we are, we're all different here. Not even sitting in my cell phone the same. And he's just as Afrikaans, I think even better than what I am. But this acceptance of the history from different sides, whether it's your part or my part, is what makes us to come and sit here and do a presentation on the sector that seems to be so bad and so wrong. And still come to government to ask for money. And I think we must look at that. Yes, indeed. And I think the minister, in all due respect, quite understands heritage and nation building. I must just say also the Freedom Front trust for some of the colleagues on this committee has not been there. I think Dr. Sarosi, Freedom Park Trust, Freedom for nine voters, you would have enjoyed that. I think Dr. Sarosi and colleagues came to all the parties to ask for a presentation on that committee that serves on the Wall of Names as well. I'm not sure who of the ANC is there. I know we think somebody. But I really would think that we should look at the history of all people and not sometimes scrutinize people because it's painful. I mean, you know, I went to, and I made a joke when we started the chairperson by saying that I went to Toy Toy at the SABC because of them using Swanee where they could still use Pretoria. And I want to share this at this moment with you. I'm of a
particular region of which I never will be shy, but even amongst the Afrikaners there are other countless religions. And the man prayed for about half an hour before we started, that specific minister, on the verbond wat gesluit was met Brutrefie. And I'm not proud of that. As much as an Afrikaner, I am and proud of who I am. I could not pray for things that happened in 19 whenever or 18 whatever, where people were excluded and being murdered. And I think we all have to accept that. It was not nice if you look back in history now, but we one always have to look at all wars and all battles that was within the broader context and actually formed us to be the nation we are today. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Honourable Bobo.
Thank you, Chair. For being so honest and outspoken and telling the truth when not to talk. I'm partly covered by Congressman Elizabeth's question. In fact, it was then in my thinking that when we went to change the state, before we come to the river, it was black and black, all around there, and it was also black and black. Not really hearing from the other side of the country. Thank you very much for the support for me. I was there for you. But now on the lighter note, I would like to visit again for the show. But the condition is, maybe this time, you're not around me. I was still younger than that. That was lucky. And the interesting part is, of course, where I cannot get next time in 4 days. Because of all the, I don't know how many steps I get. So this is a way of trying to teach them. But the disabled, who are not so young, also,
I was wondering, perhaps before one forgets that I think I have understood the girl's quite very well, and I think the point she made should not actually, be watered down. Particularly, Chairperson, if you could note it somewhere, her proposal of a workshop, because she got very emotional, and she went into, very deep, political areas, which actually suggests that we do need that kind of workshop, and I support you on that, because it's important that if we want to build this nation, we start from here at this level. Particularly within the context of this committee, so that we can understand, the fuller meaning of the term heritage within the context of South Africa, and also within the historical context. So I fully support him, just that. I'm sorry to say that.
Thank you, Honorable
Sir, I was in fact before all of the things that he does like. I would like to apologize for coming late. I was attending a meeting of Advocate Commission on Gender Equality. It started in 9 o'clock chair. Sorry for coming late. When Honorable Founder was talking about the workshop, in my mind, I was saying to myself, we really do need a workshop. in fact, when you spoke about your workshop, the reason why I was lifting up my hand, I was saying we do need a workshop. Workshop that will assist us on bringing all people involved, because some of the questions cannot be answered by a list of so much. It's comments and it's an South African issue, not his alone. We need to bring these people together and see how to work together as this heritage. And two, I think history of Afrikaners. Afrikaans is one of the languages, official language. History of the Zulus, history of the Khoisans, the people that were fought then, are not going to be washed away because of the present situation. They will remain there, and what we need to do is to understand issues and also we want our children to understand where we come from. And the issue raised by Honorable the Khaito that says you have, you know, school kids going there, that's my interesting question. That whether we do have, especially so that we have that exchange and diversity of cultures known by our children, whether schools from townships, thank you very much. Schools from townships also visit the four trackers. The last one is you mentioned very, and I'm looking at this. Looking at this, you really depend on less budget, because I do not see, I don't know how much you get from the government. But the other worrying factor is that you have to wait for other people. When you're talking about operational plans and business plans, you wait for other people. What could be the reason for that? So that, because it is the responsibility of this committee to make a follow-up. And because we're the new DG, we make a follow-up and check why are we having entities that wait for other entities for them to get the money. Thank you very much.
If we keep the game going, you know, that way it's going to create more gaps. But when I get to what like a monument, my impression, what I've noticed there, I move around and then at the center of the top of that building, there was a sculpture of and to me it shows that in fact you built the Fort Trekker monument based to the victory of the poor people to the women in the government. As I say, something must be done at the same time, because only the river that divides it, and the equipment is going to remain divided if it is taken. I can even recommend that if we go for that workshop, it might be better just to go to that place and call it African historian and also the Roman historian to debate it there, so that we can just to do away with that division that has been caused in the monument.
Thank you. On one of the slides, General Offerman made mention of closure of certain museums. I think this is something that we can't just, you know. Maybe if General Offerman, not even now, could just send something maybe to the chair that explains this thing. Which museums are these? why were they closed and who closed them and so on. So that's because this is something very, very important. We can't just be reduced.
And that's
thank you. Many major Ottoman take your country.
But, dear person, I would like to comment on this briefly, starting with your first comment about the Voortrekker name. As I said, the name as such is important, and I think we are going to upset more people than we are going to build nation and conciliate people to start disown that name and not use it. The way we are using it and how inclusive we use the history, I think is very important. But the thing specific about the name, I fully agree with that. And that is, in fact, also why we are looking at changing the name of our company, not from the Voortrekker Monument as such, but to the Heritage Foundation, to make that the mother company, which is, in a way, a recognition from outside that something must be done there. But I don't think we will ever be in a position where we will be able to denounce the name of the Voortrekker. In fact, if we do that, that will be the start of a major name-changing operation in South Africa, because I have never been to any village. You don't find a Voortrekker start or Uffiesberg or something like that. It is part of our history, which I think we have done. As far as the affirmative action is concerned, yes, we have done a lot about that. I'm sorry, I tried to get the statistics, but I haven't got it here. But we have been subjected to a formal audit from a affirmative action point of view. And we have passed all the tests every time. Because we have got, I'll tell you that we have more ladies on our staff than men. By far. And this is one of the fields where you have many more ladies active in that situation. In fact, I'm surrounded by them every day. My deputy, all my managers, extreme white, are ladies. But we have deliberately appointed a number of people from other communities to act as guides. Obviously, it is still a very culture-owned type institution, so you might find that it's difficult for people to come and work with us for the salary we pay, if they can get 3 times that salary at the people's institution. In fact, what we find is that we have quite a big turnover of personnel, because we create a chance for young people to come and work with us instead of sitting at home. But within a year, they develop a market value, and they get drawn away. Going to look at official Magenta 3 times salary. I would like to appoint for a person to come in as my marketing manager, but I cannot pay that sort of money to him. And that's the problem that we have to discuss. As far as the narratives are concerned, yes, we use principally bad guys to also relate to people in their own mother tongue. The story of the good trackers and the great trackers. And many of them come from Venda. They are very good. In fact, there was a new letter in the Bild about 3 weeks ago, where one of the people actually commented on the excellent quality of narration given by the Venda guide. And I think that's important that we try and tell people to do it. But now, at the same time, I must admit that I have just lost 3 guides. And then we've put this down to 2, because we cannot. Then we can't sustain their services with the salaries we pay. And that's the problem. So we have this year problem. As far as Freedom Park is concerned, I come back to that as a separate topic, because I think it is extremely important that we deal with that situation. The second one, which is obviously very important, that it was mentioned here, is the question of blood flow. That one, deal with it, that one now immediately. At the moment, I am providing a bridge between Bladflover and Nomad, because I also sit on the Council of the Mzunduzi Museum, which is also responsible for Nomad and Bladflover, for Nomad. I'm responsible for Bladflover, but I'm sitting on the Council, so I'm co-responsible for Nomad. And as a result of that, we have, from the Voortrekker Monument side, accepted the principle that the bridge, the footbridge, must be built between the 2 sides, spanning the Blood River there. So people can go from one side to the other side. We will obviously have to take care of some security reasons. course, we find a lot of vandalism at the Wagon Lager, so we must be able to control the situation. We must also, in a way, see how we're going to deal with the loss of income for Blood River, because Blood River is being subsidized by the Voortrekker Monument. In fact, last year, I have had to write off an amount of $700,000, which Blood River will never be able to repay to the Voortrekker Monument. Because remember, Blood River doesn't get any subsidy from the state. We have to provide for both the capital and also the operational expenses at Blood River. But we are ready to cooperate in physical terms on the ground. I'm a bit surprised that, if I'm understanding correctly, you've not been able to get to the Blood River side of the museum, because that is open 7 days of the week, every day from 8 o'clock in the morning until 4:30 in the afternoon. And that is for 365 days a year, so I'm not sure what happened there. In fact, normally it's not always open. Normally it's not open on Sundays, for instance, and Saturdays only apart. Where we have that from our side, we pride ourselves on that. So I'm not sure exactly what happened there. As far as the cooperation on the ground is concerned, we've got a joint marketing committee between Blood River and Normies. We've actually revised the pamphlets to make sure that we tell one story. You know, in the past, this was an acute embarrassment because people come to the one side, Blood River, and hear this story, and they go to the other side and hear what we refer to as a Mpalala version of history, which says that, you know, there was never a battle of Blood River, there was never blood in River. There were people who got killed in the Wagon Lager, but they were only the Voortrekkers, there were no human killed, so that was quite conflicted and caused confusion in the minds of people who visited. Now, on the 16th of December, you'll find an extract of my speech, this is our football in your folder. I delivered the speech at Normie, which I placed the accent on the necessity to develop reinterpretations and closer cooperation. And then the Deputy Minister of Arts and Culture challenged three people at the conference to do something about the matter. The one was the chairman of, the CEO of SARA. The other one was the chairman of the Voortrekker Museum, Peter Maritzburg, the Zulu Museum Professor Martin Juan, and I was the third person, to do something about this, to promote dialogue about the Great Trek and Blood River. I took up the challenge. I, in fact, arranged a seminar. And I invited Dr. Wally Sorote, I invited Makamali Mutulezi, and also Professor Matenjwa as speakers, and also Professor Yati Venkamp from the Cape, as speakers at the seminar to go and put their version on the table so that we can actually engage in different versions as far as they were. Unfortunately, Mr. Mutulezi, Professor Sorote, and also Professor Matenjwa, all three withdrew from the seminar as speakers. One or three days before the seminar, and I had to appoint a white academician to come and present the Zulu version of what happened there. So we really tried to get it onto the table so we can engage in this. And I, for one, say that, listen, even though for the majority of people, the Bell and the government and the Afrikaans community is very important, there are some people who say that, listen, this is not, it cannot be true. I don't say they are right. There are some people who say that, listen, it is not divine intervention, it was a great tactical battle that was won there, whatever the case might be. Different versions, even from within the Afrikaans-speaking community about the situation, we put on the table, we debated this. I think it was very constructive, and I gave you, again in your folder, the impressions that we drew from that seminar. I think we must do more about this. We must engage in difficult subjects, let's come together. That's why I would think that's not the fitting for us. So I would say that it's good if you could have a work session and also put the most difficult emotional things on the table and talk about that. Mr. Solomalta was at the seminar arranged last year as a presidential visitor that day, when he spoke about the whole question of the military veteran affairs and their position concerning the names on the Wall of Remembrance at Freedom Park. You know, I must tell you, if there's anything that has really divided and estranged many people from the Afrikaans community, it's the way this whole name question of the ex-SADF forum
has been handled at Freedom Park. And many people who were interested to support the operation of nation building and reconciliation at this stage don't want to know anything about Freedom Park. In fact, they are against nation building and reconciliation because they say that these years of the past, people who died in what they believe service of the country are now being portrayed as people who murdered and whatever it is that, and they are not lost at Freedom Park. And they say, if they are not lost at Freedom Park, we won't go to Freedom Park. I've tried to arrange very actively cross attendance of activities at Freedom Park and at Footlick Monument. Last year, for instance, we had Dr. Swartie and I put a challenge to each other, and we said, well, let's try and get 40 people from the white Afrikaans community to go attend the activities on 16 December at Freedom Park. And you get 40 people from your constituency to come to Alfred. Now, in the end, I could only get 14 people to go to Freedom Park, but part of the reason is that we got the details about what was going to happen at Freedom Park so late that many people were good. If I had the details before, I would have been able to get more people there. But many of them said, listen, we are going to depend on radio announcements concerned with that. I'm not going to check Freedom Park at this place, not all. But you know what happened from the Freedom Park side? They had two people attending the activity at Footlick Monument. One was a white official and the other person was a black person. We arrived an hour late. I'm saying this to you in a very frank way. That makes it difficult to promote extension of attendance of activities. We can speak about this, but if it doesn't happen in practice, then we've got a problem. I have invited Dr. Swartie on more than one occasion to come and address people at the Footlick Monument. At the breakfast, and also with the leaders of all the Afrikaans cultural movements, where I've sponsored the function at him to address people and speak, because I believe that's part of what we must do to promote communication and legitimacy as well, that people can see that we are involved. On the other hand, when there was a seminar last year, earlier this year, where I applied for an opportunity to speak at the seminar, just to try and calm the mood, because at that stage many people were extremely agitated about the ending of the session. I never even received a reply to my application to speak at the seminar. So it comes from two sides. I think we must be honest about this. It cannot only be one-sided communication. The attempts to reconcile must come from two sides, but I think that's extremely important. As far as blood is concerned, I hope that bridge will be built earlier or later this year. I'm afraid that it might not happen in practice because the money that was allocated to the state for the improvements at Nomi has really been spent on the services only, and they need more money to also build the buildings at such as this site. Initially, the amount of money that was involved was about, I think, 7 million. They've already spent about 15 million. Now they need more money. And I don't think they can just keep on giving money. So I think one of the things that will possibly become a victim of the inavailability of funds might be the bridge. But then it's not the fact that we don't want the bridge there. It might be other reasons for that. As far as the learners are concerned, your question seems two people asked about that. We actively market to the townships, we call them the three disadvantaged schools and communities. And as I said before, at this stage we have more learners from the traditionally black schools visiting the Footlick Monument than from the traditionally white schools. What we find is that many of the white teachers still think it is possibly not politically correct to come and visit the Footlick Monument. Or they are so busy with their school matters that they do not send their learners on so many visits. Whilst I think at this stage, possibly after a scholarship program, there are many more people from the traditional black schools who come, and I would like to make an admission to today. Now, when I came there about 7 years ago, I had to send away a school of black learners one day because many of them were under the influence of liquor. The teachers were extremely intimidated. And I just said, listen, we can't allow this with our foreign visitors or other visitors. You must please leave the area. And I wrote a letter to the principal. And that has never, ever happened again. If they come now, they are well-dressed, well-behaved, under control of the teachers, and they are eager to learn. And I'm so grateful about that, because even there, a lot has happened since 7 years ago. And now they are extremely welcome, as are all other South Africans. And all other visitors, for that matter. We want to keep them aware that they feel welcome there. But what is positive is how they interact with us, and how we can actually see that they appreciate the way that they are being treated at our institution. About the closure of museums, possibly just the one remark. I think the museums that are being closed are mostly at the provincial level and at the local government level, where they are totally changing priorities. Let's take the question as the example of Vinburg. It falls under the Free State provincial government. The decision was made that it should be converted from a Voortrek museum to a pioneer museum to commemorate all the pioneers of that area. My point of criticism is that if you want to change something, it should not entail that you must first destroy what you have and then try and rebuild something else in place, because it just becomes so much more difficult. If you want to change the thing, get a proper planning plan, get a proper procedure taking place, and then gradually introduce new and take away the old. But to let the first one deteriorate to the point where it cannot be recovered afterwards, I think that's a bad investment on your return. Mm-hmm. And that's unfortunately what has happened at Vinburg. I've personally been at Vinburg. I made an appointment with the person in charge there to go and visit him on a Saturday morning. I travelled there, and when I got there, the museum was closed. I got him to try to get him on his cell phone, and I spoke to somebody else. I said, but where is the person that I was making an appointment with? He told me that he went shopping, but he gave me his cell phone to take down his call. And I had to go. I think the last question was asked our Sala Chemkeling is driven by Leka. Why do Afrikaners not participate in public holidays? This is something that is an issue. I think many people see it as that many of these days are celebrated in a political way. The mistakes of the past are being repeated. And we did that in the past, I must be honest about that, but I think it's being done again. Frequently, if I see, for instance, speeches made on the 16th of June or Women's Day or other days, that we also want to celebrate that many of the speeches are so political in nature that I find it difficult to associate myself with. That's why we say that, listen, we are going to celebrate those days, but in a political way. If more of these days could be done, celebrate in a political way, it might be easier to associate with that. Secondly, I think we must also realize that people have got different ways of celebrating. For instance, we have arranged marriage, used the term busing, as used in the United States. We have arranged buses to take white people to the Union Building. But you know, if a white person normally goes to a function like that, the person is knows that there will be a chair for him to sit in the stand. It's a different way of celebrating. You know, we look very serious. We don't easily bring in the production of jazz music. We clap hands. Sometimes even our cricket. So they go there and they have to stand on the lawn with tens of thousands of other people listening to music that is strange to them, very loud speakers and speeches in languages that they don't understand. it also again deter from that. The second, the third point I want to mention is sometimes things are difficult from a cultural and religious point of view. If you, for instance, go to the ECP Vani at Peter Park, many people find it difficult to associate with that from a cultural or a religious point of view. What he's saying is that let us not force them to go there, but I've been at the inauguration of Freedom Park, and I sat at the table with the South African Council of Churches, and the whole group got up and they went to the beach in Shibivane inauguration, but I was sitting at the table. I watched it to the beach, and I went to that. But it's working strange for me to be there from a religious and cultural point of view. And I don't think it's what should be blamed for that, but there are a number of reasons. We must find.
Thank you.
I'll have a case transfer to the data Ubuntu. It's on our website. I need to contact them at Kaunda. And the date is there. I think that I'm
okay.